All glorious to the assembled devotees, all glorious to the assembled devotees, all glorious to the assembled devotees. All glorious to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga, all glorious to Srila Prabhupada. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Nitya Namane Namaste Sarasvata Devi Gauravani Prachadane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatade Shutadane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadata Shusti Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, chapter 51, verse 47. Aimaisha kaulo jita nispalo gato. Rajasriyon nadamadasya bhupate. Matyama Bhude Sutadara Kosha Bhush Asaja Manasya Doranta Chittaya Mama, my Isha, this Kala, time, Ajita, O unconquerable one, Nishpa. Fruitlessly, Gata, now gone, Raja, by kingdom, Shriya, and opulence, Unnada, built up, Madasya, whose intoxication, Bhupate, a king of the earth, Marcha, mortal body, Atma, as the self, Bude, whose mentality, Sutta, to children, Dara, wives, Kosha, treasury, Bhushu, land, Asajjamanasya, becoming attached, Duranta, endless, Chintaya, with anxiety. Translation, I've wasted all this time, O unconquerable one, becoming more and more intoxicated by dominion and opulence as an earthly king, misidentifying the mortal body as the self, becoming attached to children, wives, and treasury and land, I suffered endless anxiety. Purport, having in the previous verse condemned those who misuse the valuable human form of life for mundane purposes, Mochukunda now admits that he himself falls in this category. He intelligently wants to take advantage of the Lord's association and become a pure devotee once and for all. Text 48. With deep arrogance, I took myself to be the body, which is a material object like a pot or a wall. Thinking myself a god among men, I traveled the earth surrounded by my charioteers, elephants, cavalry, foot soldiers, and generals, disregarding you in my deluding pride. So, here, Mochukunda is identifying himself with those people who have fallen into the andakupa, the blind well, and they're like animals, wasting their time by not worshiping the Supreme Lord. So, of course, there is a reason why they neglect the Lord, and that is there are a lot of attractions in this world. Even though the Lord is very beautiful, full of all wonderful qualities, people look in this material world, and they see so many attractive things. And, of course, the Supreme Lord himself is not always present. Now, of course, we can say, well, the deity forms are present. But if a materialist looks at the deity, even he's not attracted to that also. So we need special devotional eyes to appreciate the deities also. Yeah. On the other hand, they look at anything in the material world, and definitely without training, people appreciate these things. So they're very attracted to these things. Why? It's the nature of the senses to be attracted to sense objects. So for the eye, we have form. For the ear, we have sound, etc. So naturally, the senses are going to go out and contact these different objects of the senses. And through that, they get some enjoyment. Therefore, the attraction of objects in the material world is very, very strong. Whereas attraction to the form of the Lord, etc., requires some special type of knowledge and vision, etc. So naturally, people are going to become absorbed in this material world. So a human being has got some advantages and disadvantages. I explained previously that he has intelligence, which the animals don't have. That's an advantage. Other animals may be stronger, like the elephant or the tiger, but a human being, is he's weaker, but he's more intelligent. So human beings have intelligence, so they make weapons like guns or bows and arrows, and they can shoot the elephant or the tiger, or they can trap the elephant or whatever. Elephant can't think like that. Tiger cannot think like that. So intelligence is there. So with our intelligence, we can do many things. And get superior to the animals and the plants, etc. And this way we can survive in the material world. So that's one use of the intelligence for survival, so that we can get our food, artha, dharma, kama, all of this. We can get our artha and kama, at least, in the material world. So that's an advantage. The disadvantage is that the senses of the human being are not always satisfied with taking what they need. They want more. Yeah? So artha is you take what you need, and that's basically what animals do. They eat, and then they finish. So very rarely in the wilderness do we see fat animals. And they eat, and then after they've eaten, they finish. They don't overeat and keep eating and eating and eating, thinking, well, tomorrow's going to be no food, I'll eat twice as much today or whatever like that. They don't do that. They take what is necessary, so they stay normal. But human being, senses are a little different. And they keep thinking, well, I got to eat more and more. I got to have more and more of this. Not just eating, but everything. So their senses are, we can say, uncontrolled. There's some natural control for the animals, but there's no natural control for the human being. And of course, he can use his intelligence to also fuel this need for more things. He can give many excuses why he needs to get more and more and more and more of enjoyment for his senses. So the Vedic literature understands this, and therefore they have rules and regulations for controlling the senses. And this is what we call civilized life. We have dharma, varnashram rules to control the senses. So we limit how much and what we eat and what we do, etc., and various aspects of life. So basically all these rules are for controlling the senses so that we don't go beyond what is necessary in using our senses in the material world. So we get artha, we can survive in the material world, and we don't get, and even kama is allowed, but we don't get excessive kama. So that is why we have artha and kama, and then we have dharma to give a restriction there so we don't get too much enjoyment. So in this way, that disadvantages the human being, excessive use of his senses, is put under control. But not all people want to accept those laws of dharma. They don't want those rules and regulations. And of course, if one does it in a dharmic society, then one breaks the rules, one goes to prison. So that basically is what happens in the country. You break the laws, you go to prison. You're excessive. It's a lack of control of your senses, excessive wanting to enjoy on your own. So, of course, all civilizations do have some rules and regulations by which they control its members. But we could say the most accurate and purposeful rules are built into the Varnashram system by which we gradually get purified and elevated to sattva. And then we can go on to Jnana Yoga, Astanga Yoga, Bhakti Yoga. Then we get Moksha and Bhakti. So in that sense, it's a superior system, controlling the senses for higher purpose. You're not just controlling the senses so that the society stays in order or whatever like that. But the higher purpose is there for the individual. So, nevertheless, we find that persons like here we see Mutrakunda is frustrated. He was following the system. He was a king. He very well knew the rules and he followed them quite nicely. But he's also lamenting, oh, I wasted all my time intoxicated with my enjoyment in the material world with family members and children, etc., etc. So, of course, he must have been following the rules quite nicely, so we shouldn't criticize him. Yet, if one is in a higher level of detachment or bhakti, then one will lament this position of following the rules of Varnashram, even if we're following nicely. And we will condemn ourselves as being very fallen because we're absorbed in all of this artha, dharma, kama. From another point of view, of course, they're doing very well because they're following these rules, dharma, etc. But if we're on a higher level, then we tend to lament even this position of dharma. Of course, it's better than no dharma, but even this system is considered to be inferior. So that is why we'll find in various Vedic literatures like the Upanishads, there's also a condemnation of material life. Even if it is according to dharma, it's all useless, etc. There's an encouragement to go beyond even a dharmic life and go for liberation, getting out of the material world. So we'll find many statements about condemning material life. Here we'll find similar condemnation of material life. So, therefore, there's a double presentation of dharma. One is good because it helps us elevate and controls our senses and we
get to sattva, the ultimate goal is spiritual, that's good. Negative aspect is, if we stop there, then we stay in the material world. And we can go upwards to Svargaloka, Brahmaloka, then we fall down again, whatever. So we're back at the same position again of enjoying in the material world. So that is the position. If we're on the higher level, then we'll start condemning even Dharma and Karma Yoga, Varnashram system as a very low system, because it still allows for the enjoyment, and we can get caught up in that cycle of enjoyment by following Dharma as well. So that is the sense that we have when we see that many of the great devotees lament their position in the material world and whatever. Another aspect, of course, is that the devotee by nature will identify himself as very, very fallen and consider himself very unqualified. Of course, we find that we're so unqualified that therefore we have to get more mercy from the Lord. That's the prayer. I'm so fallen that therefore you give more mercy to me. The Vaishnavas in general, the more they advance, the more they consider themselves fallen. So they will identify themselves with lowly people in the material world. Yeah. And we will find that even in the persons, the highest persons, even the Nitya Siddhas will also identify themselves as materialistic persons bound up by karma. So there's a section in the, when the people of Vrindavan, they, after Nanda Maharaj was taken by Varuna's people and went down there, and then he came back. They discuss about, Krishna was worshipped by Varuna, he must be Supreme Lord, so we should ask him for something like that. they identify themselves as people of the material world. We are just lowly, cowherd people attached to our families, etc., this and that, whatever. So they think of themselves as very, very ordinary people. Of course, part of this is because in Vrindavan, this is the mode. They think, identify themselves as cowherds. But the other aspect is because they're great devotees, they're not very proud of their position at all. In any case, they think of themselves lowly and fallen and conditioned by Maya, etc., even though they're not. In this way, description of oneself as fallen and attached to material energy, even if the person is not, is a symptom of the Vaishnava. And we see that here, that Moksha-kunda is very highly qualified, yet he is willing to condemn himself as being too attached to the material world and wasting his time in the material world, falling into the dark well of material life, etc., and being no better than an animal. We shouldn't criticize the great devotees when they make such statements and identify themselves as materialists, because actually they're not. They're elevated devotees. And Mukunda was in a special position because he was a great king, and he was a great warrior, and he even sacrificed himself to fight for the Devatas. And this way he neglected his own kingdom, so he was obviously not too attached to everything. And of course, he fought for many years for the Devatas. Until finally they were able to go on their own, manage on their own. So he was somewhat detached already. And of course, it was stated already that he would be able to see the Lord. So he was highly qualified. He was not a low person at all. And here we see that the prediction came true. He got to meet Krishna. Not just Supreme Lord, but he got to meet Krishna, which is even rarer. So why would the Lord be so merciful to him? Because he's highly qualified. He deserves this, and therefore the Lord reveals himself to him. So therefore, when Moksha-kunda prays like that, we shouldn't think of him actually as being a materialistic person. He's very, very qualified. But this is a symptom of his pure nature. Misidentifying with this material body is the cause here. this marcha atma buddhi. Intelligence is fixed on thinking of self as a material body. And that's the cause of attachment to things in this material world. So why do we think of ourselves in terms of a material body? And this ultimately it is ignorance, this avidya or ajnana, which is, you say, maya. We completely misidentify. So this is not just the mind doing this. It's actually the atma doing this. The atma identifies himself as a material body. How? Through ahankara. This covering of ahankara makes the atma think, I am material body. The false I. And once that is established, then I am this body, I have these senses, then I should use these senses for the enjoyment of the body. And one becomes attached to all sorts of things in this material world, because one thinks one is the body. And the body needs all of these things for its enjoyment. So the ignorance of the jiva is one, of course, as he identifies with the material body. But why does he identify with the material body? Why must he do that? And the ultimate answer is it's twofold. One is ignorance of Supreme Lord. Consequently, a desire to get his own enjoyment. If we recognize the Lord, then, and we can see the Lord, then we can't think of our own enjoyment. We think of giving everything to the Lord. But immediately we don't recognize the Lord, we're thinking in terms of ourselves, without the Lord. So that is the ultimate ignorance. It's not just ignorance of that I'm Ama. No, it is ignorance of the Supreme Lord. And this impels us to get enjoyment. The enjoyment then helps us get this material body. We think we're the material body. Then we go through this process of doing activities to satisfy our senses and become attached to different things in this material world. So, what is the solution? There's two ways of approaching it. One is, okay, let's get rid of all the attachments. Let's get rid of the senses going out for the sense objects. Let's control the mind. And, of course, Krishna also tells Arjuna to do that in the second chapter. Control the mind, control the senses, be equipoise like a turtle withdrawing his legs and arms into the shell like this, so you withdraw your senses. And this is what they do in Ashtanga Yoga, Pratyahara, withdraw the senses from objects. Don't be attracted to objects. And then concentrate inside. So what do they concentrate on? Atma. Jhana means concentrate on Atma. So this is one method. Withdraw the senses and concentrate on understanding I am Atma, I am Brahman, etc. So we can do this through yoga or jnana. But very, very difficult to do because the nature of the senses and body, everything is to be active all the time. So that they don't want to stop. They don't want to get under control. They want to go out and get their objects of enjoyment, etc. So it's a difficult process. And that's why the yogis have to practice an awful lot to get to the stage of samadhi through meditation. So, difficult. Krishna offers easier process in Bhagavad Gita, even in chapter 2. And that is, if you have a higher taste, give up the lower taste. Of course, that can be applied to Atma also. Get a taste for Atma, then you give up a lower taste for material things. But Atma, of course, is tasty in one sense because that's your very self and it's very dear to the individual. But more tasty is Supreme Lord. He is most attractive. He is most wonderful, filled with all wonderful qualities. And the experience we get from that is bliss. So that's the highest taste. The bliss of Brahman is considered what? Distaste. It is moksha, lugutakrit. Liberation is regarded as useless. When a person attains bhava stage and he realizes the Lord, that ananda allows him to understand that the bliss of liberation is useless, insignificant. So the higher taste is actually in realizing the Supreme Lord. So that is the process of bhakti. By becoming more and more attracted to Krishna, then we're able to withdraw our senses from objects for our enjoyment. Of course, made easy because Krishna says, okay, you can use the senses also. So the definition of sadhana bhakti is engage the senses. So we don't stop the senses as they do in Ashtanga Yoga and Jnana, but rather we use the senses. But we use it in such a way that's not for ourselves, for Supreme Lord. Then that's called Yukta Vairagya. So we practice Vairagya, but not like the Jnani and the Yogi. It is Yukta Vairagya. We give everything to Krishna. So that's what Lord Chaitanya said, real sannyas is quoting from the Avanti Brahmana's prayers. Real sannyas means to give everything to Krishna. So we're not just giving things up, we're giving everything to Krishna. So that is what the process of bhakti is. Engage the senses, meaning we use our senses to glorify the Lord and please the Lord. It's for His pleasure. So through that process, what happens is, even though these are material senses, we're using a material body, we're using engaging all that. If our intention is to please the Lord, and that comes from the Atma, then the Atma starts developing more and more attraction for the Lord. Until it is full of attraction for the Lord, then it is called prema. And at that stage, zero influence of Maya. And in fact, the Lord guarantees no more Maya. So he endows the jiva with the pradini and chit shaktis, and then he permanently fixes that in the jiva, and there's no possibility of attraction to the material world. So that's why he promises, you attain me, you don't come back to the material world. No more attraction to Maya at all. Why? Because the jiva permanently has that pradini and samvit shaktis there, which continually cause increase of attraction for the Lord. And I'm going to give him experience of bliss. So he's got the highest taste there. So therefore, when he's got the highest taste and it's fixed in him, how can he fall from that position? Cannot. So that's an arrangement the Lord makes. So the whole process of bhakti is always connected with the Supreme Lord. And it ultimately depends on His mercy that we can advance. We advance only by His mercy. There's a direct interaction between the Lord and the devotee in this process, where the Lord is indifferent to these other processes. He's not personally interacting with the Jnani and the Yogi and the Karmi at all, but He's interacting with the devotee personally. And therefore, it allows the devotee to progress quite easily and quickly compared to the process of Jnana and Yoga. So, in this way, we solve this problem of being stuck in the material world, etc. Simply engage the senses in a way that destroys karma and helps us develop attraction for Krishna.
In the previous verses, Muchukunda is telling that other people are not following their material pleasures. But here he says, by himself. So this is called realization. Can we say this is what realization means, that I am not able to follow and I have to come out of this material world?
Well, it's an aspect. In one sense, it's not true, because if he gets to see the Lord, he must be very highly qualified, so he's already in control of his senses. He's not attached to his family at all. But it's a sign at this stage of humility, and humility goes along with prema. And the higher you go in prema, the more humility. So if you go up to Madhurya Rasa with the gopis, they're the most humble. They consider themselves most fallen and most unqualified. But they're also the highest. So, therefore, the humility goes along with the realization of the Lord, and we consider ourselves very unqualified.
Can we understand that unless one undergoes suffering, he can't get realized knowledge? A person realizes only after suffering.
Well, that's the general course in the material world. Most people come to bhakti because they're suffering in the material world, and otherwise they enjoy very nicely. So that's why I said that on other upper planetary systems, difficult to do bhakti because It's too nice. They got all the enjoyments, everything very nice. So there's no impetus. Earth planet, there's a balance, there's some enjoyment and some suffering. So that suffering is a constant reminder that something wrong with this material world. But even if you suffer, not all people are going to surrender. Some don't surrender, they do the opposite. They do more and more sinful activities and more criminal things in their suffering state. So it's only some people who take to the Lord. What is that? They've developed faith. But faith does not depend on simply suffering. It depends on mercy of devotees. By that they develop the faith. So those who got the mercy of devotees, then they can develop faith when they're in a suffering condition and begin practicing.
You explain this higher test and lower test. Like, see, if we take the material example, like those who are South Indian, they have this different food, and those who are North Indian or those who are West Bengal, they have a different food. But it's depend on the person to person, that which one is. Suppose those who are in North South Indian, they say Italy, those are like the higher test for them. Similarly, you know, that if we see that, you know, those who are in the materialistic, they think that enjoyment in the material is the higher taste for them.
Yeah, yeah. According to perspective, then we will have different higher tastes. And it is only when you get real frustrated, they think maybe that's not a high taste because they're not getting any taste anymore, and then you may start questioning. But you won't surrender to the Lord at that point unless you do have some little faith and get the mercy of devotees.
Sometimes, you know, see, our devotees also say that, you know, I think before coming to Krishna consciousness, I was maybe better than this situation now, because of even first, there is also frustration in the devotional life. They feel sometime, you know.
So there are obstacles in within bhakti also. But the approach the Bhagavatam gives is that any suffering or whatever one has within the bhakti, one considers it self-created. Amakritam vipakam. It is self-created. We've caused ourselves to come in this situation somehow or other due to past karmas, due to aparads or whatever. But in spite of the difficulties, one continues the process of bhakti, continues to serve the Lord, and without any ill feeling towards the Lord. And this becomes his, the way in which he gets the mercy of the Lord. But if, on the other hand, he has doubts all the time, then he will not progress. He will blame the Lord, and he'll stop the process.
Another question, Maharaj. In the beginning of the class, you were saying that the persons, you know, the Lord is the same. Like, you know, we see Lord here in a deity form. He is there. But it's depend on the person's quality, with the qualification. If a person is not qualified, you know, he may not be able to respect with the Lord. But, you know, we see, all the same Lord is there, but and person is the same. And living in jivas are the same, but depend on the qualities, you know, the qualification, that Lord is not reciprocating with the person. Lord is not reciprocating with the person because that person is not qualified.
Yeah, he may give Lord can give mercy, but then the person doesn't appreciate it. What can the Lord do? So he doesn't. The Lord reveals himself to Kalayavana and Jarasandha and Kamsa. They don't appreciate him. So the Lord kills them or arranges for their death or whatever like that. That's his mercy there.
But the, you know, question again might come up, the Lord is, even he is in the heart also, so he can purify immediately also, because
special cases, some, but usually he allows them to advance at their own rate. But he's merciful even to the demons, so if he kills them, then they get liberation, then they're purified, because there's no impurities in liberation.
We see that in the case of Dhruva Maharaj, you know, although Dhruva Maharaj had many desires, but once Lord trust him, you know, he got purified immediately. But it didn't happen for like demons and others.
Yeah. But he was already a devotee and he got the mercy of Narada Muni. See, he also got special mercy there by which he was able to advance and then realize the Lord within 6 months or so. So that's also a case of special mercy of Narada Muni. So yes, if we get special mercy of devotees or the Supreme Lord, then we can advance quickly or see the Lord in spite of all the difficulties or whatever.